Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In my last sermon, I talked about the decline of religion in America in general and Christianity in particular. Those of you who were present last time perhaps remember that I shared with you quite a few charts and graphs that essentially showed fewer Americans attend religious services these days. Inshallah, today I will stay on this topic, decline of religion in America, but change tracks a little bit. What are some of the solutions? What can be done to restore trust in religion? First, let's recap the main points of my last talk. In a 2021 Gallup poll, only 47% of respondents said that they belong to a church, mosque, or synagogue. In 1999, almost 20 years before, that number, the number of people who associated with a religion or a religious institution, stood at 70%. So there has been a 23% decline in religious membership in just 20 years. That's a staggering decline. It's worth noting that the decline is most acute among white Christians. So this is mostly a white Christian phenomenon. 73% of those who say, "I have no religion," happen to be white. The other 27% are African Americans, Hispanics, Filipinos, and other ethnicities. Although only 47% of Americans describe themselves as religious, it doesn't mean that the rest are atheists. Far from that. 33% of Americans also say that they are spiritual but not religious. They are spiritual but not religious. And 2% say that we are both religious and spiritual. The remaining 18% say that they are neither religious or spiritual. So just the fact that there has been decline in religion, it doesn't mean that this is a net gain for atheism in America. The big question is this: why are people turning away from religion in such high numbers? And that's what I discussed in some detail last time. There are many factors involved. There are many factors that push people away from religion. I discussed some of the factors and some of the reasons last time, and here are some of them. Some of the reasons why there has been a sharp rise in religious nuns in the past 20 years. One reason is that perhaps today in America, people are more honest about their interest in religion than, let's say, 50 years ago during the Cold War. Back then, during the Cold War era, atheism was seen as synonymous with communism, and America was fighting an existential battle against communism. Just imagine, in such an environment, would you want to say that, "Hey, I am an atheist"? Probably not. That environment, the Cold War environment, pushed a lot of non-religious people into the closet. But these folks came out of the closet when communism collapsed in the early 1990s. Now, in public surveys, respondents could more easily tick the non-religious box. Hence, the sharp rise in religious nuns starting in the early 1990s. Another reason, massive shifts in social norms, particularly social norms that have to do with sex and marriage. The sexual revolution of the 1960s created a huge gap, even a gulf, between the American culture and Christian teachings. Even the most committed young Christians would find it difficult to live up to their religious ideals. When you live in a hostile culture, you will naturally feel guilt and shame when you think you have failed to live up to your religion's expectations. That's quite natural, this feeling of shame and guilt. Inevitably, this would nudge some young people toward either unbelief or toward a belief system that is more free and easier about such matters. So let me give you another reason, and perhaps the most significant contributor to religion's decline in America. It was the advent of the internet. The internet was a game changer for religion. If you have doubts about God, if you have doubts about your religious community, today, thanks to the internet, there is so much stuff that would give support to your doubts. It would essentially support your feeling that maybe there is something wrong with the whole notion of God, or there is something wrong with my community. That's what internet will give you these days. There are, in fact, a lot of research studies that show internet use is associated with increases in being non-religious. So this is not a figment of imagination. There are other factors that religious nuns often cite for leaving religion. Widespread hypocrisy among religious people. Scandals in the church, scandals involving clergymen and women. Obsession of religious institutions with money and power. And that's something that I hear all the time from people who opt out of religion, that religion these days is more concerned with power and money and far less interested in spirituality and faith. Another common complaint, religion is outdated. Its belief system is full of superstitions. Religion is out of step with modern sciences. Another complaint, the God of most religions, the God of Islam, Christianity, Judaism, is very angry, is very intolerant, is very abusive. This God actually nurtures the same traits that he has, his anger, intolerance, and abusiveness onto his followers. Another good one, another good complaint, which I can actually relate to, exclusivism. Every religion claims that it is right and all the other religions are false. This attitude of exclusivity and exclusive access to righteousness and truth flies in the face of pluralism, which is one of the building blocks of the modern society, or at least modern Western society. Now, all of the factors that I just mentioned, all of these complaints turn young people away from religion. These factors turn them off. Now, this was a long summary of my last talk, but it was really necessary. It was necessary for the rest of my talk today on some solutions. Some solutions to combat the decline of religion in America. Now, I cannot address all of the factors that I cited behind the decline of religion. We just don't have that much time. But just let me address two or three of the main factors, main complaints that most non-religious folks have about religion. It is quite common, particularly among the clergy, to view those who leave religion as spiritually weak, as morally weak, as perhaps falling prey to Satan. This is very common, and I'm sure a lot of you can relate to, and you've heard it a lot from the pulpit. It is claimed by a lot of religious folks that those who leave religion, abandon faith, there is something wrong with them. I don't share that sentiment, and let me be frank with you. I do not share that sentiment. This sort of deflection is not helpful at all. It's not going to solve the problem of the rise of religious nuns in the modern world. Instead, I honestly think that we, and by we I mean religious people, we must listen genuinely. We must listen genuinely to people who are turned off by religion. We must listen to their complaints. Let me let you in into one of my own personal experiences. Personally, I have learned so much from atheists. I know this is perhaps not the politically correct way of putting things for a Muslim intellectual, but it is true. I have learned so much from atheists. I have learned so much from staunch opponents of religion, such as Friedrich Feuerbach, the 19th century German philosopher. I've learned so much from the likes of Karl Marx, Sigmund Freud, and Jean-Paul Sartre. Through their critique of religion, I came to realize that some conceptions of God are in fact harmful. Some conceptions of God are bad. Some conceptions of God damage the human soul. Through their critique of religion, I came to realize that some ideas and practices which have been developed by theologians and jurists over the centuries stifle human progress. And I'm honest about it. So, my suggestion as a remedy is that we must listen with an open mind to the complaints of the opponents of religion. And let me just go over two or three of them. The first complaint, or the first major complaint that I personally hear all the time: there is so much corruption, there is so much scandal in religious institutions, among the clergy. Well, I believe that this is a well-founded complaint. They are right. These folks are right. In the past few decades, there have been so many press reports on sexual abuse of children by priests, nuns, and other members of the Catholic Church. You hear about it all the time in the media. But scandals are not limited to the Catholic Church. Evangelical churches have had their share of scandals. In fact, I want to go further. Religious institutions of all stripes, Muslims and Jewish included, are filled with people that abuse their privileged positions. They abuse their authority. Those of you who follow the news of Iran must be familiar with what life looks like under the Islamic Republic of Iran, what life looks like under the reign of the mullahs. Historically, there has always been a lot of corruption in the rank and file of religious seminaries in the Muslim world, such as Iran. After the 1979 revolution, however, that corruption poured out into the larger Iranian society. If there is just one word that would describe Iran under the reign of the mullahs, that word is corruption. Iran is corrupted, mostly by the mullahs. Now, unfortunately, often abuse and scandals among religious authorities are swept under the carpet. That seems to be the norm in most religious communities. The average religious person tends to think that publicizing such scandals and corruption would tarnish the image of the religion. So victims are often hushed, or even they are often punished for coming forward, while the men who engage in abusive behaviors are protected. I strongly believe that if we want to restore people's trust in religion, we must prosecute, not shield, abusive religious authorities. We should not shield them. In fact, this is our religious duty. We should never shield the offenders. This is the right thing to do, which, by the way, sends a signal that religion stands for honesty and decency. The second complaint that we often hear from religious nuns: hypocrisy. Hypocrisy. Hypocrisy ranks very high in the list of complaints that people have about religion. Atheists and religious nuns accuse religious people of being hypocritical. And you know what? That's a valid complaint. Let me give you an example for something that is going on right now in this moment in history. Christianity preaches the sanctity of human life. Christians call themselves pro-life, and that's why they oppose abortion. They see a fetus as being an alive human being. Abortion amounts to murder. Yet, a large number of evangelical Christians, particularly Christian Zionists, support Israel's genocide in Gaza today. In the last 5 months, more than 10,000 Palestinian children have been slaughtered by the Israeli army in Gaza. Yet, most American evangelicals are opposed to a ceasefire. Christian Zionists even go further. They have pushed and pushed the Biden administration to send bombs and munitions to Israel to carry out its war in Gaza. These same folks that shed tears for an aborted fetus support the mass slaughter of fully formed human children in Gaza. And that's hypocrisy at its worst. And by the way, this sort of hypocrisy registers with people that have doubts about the truth of religion. Hypocrisy is a very big deal for human beings. It's a big deal. There is a good deal of evidence that human beings are hardwired with a keen hypocrisy detector. All of us, you and I, have in us a hypocrisy detector. We can easily detect when somebody is hypocritical. We do not believe things people tell us when their own actions violate what they say. We don't believe them. If I constantly lecture my kids about oral hygiene, but never brush my own teeth, my kids will have a hard time believing that oral hygiene is important. In other words, the medium is the message, and I hope this stays with you. The medium is the message. As the saying goes, don't talk the talk unless you can walk the walk. Failing to walk the walk reflects badly not only on the talker, but on the truth of the talk. Religion looks awful. It looks awful when religious leaders who claim that their religion teaches truth and morality break the most obvious moral principles. When they lie, when they bend the truth, when they look the other way, when they are silent in the face of abuse, tyranny, and corruption committed by their brethren. Now, having said all of this, let me make a few clarifications about hypocrisy. Logically, it does not necessarily follow that if a person fails to practice what he preaches, he doesn't really believe it. It doesn't follow. There is no logical connection between the two. For example, an alcoholic person may truly believe that excessive drinking is harmful. He may even warn others against alcohol, but he may succumb. He still drinks alcohol while he genuinely believes that alcohol is harmful. As the Gospel of Matthew says it the best, the spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak. So we should always have this in mind when we think about hypocrisy. The spirit may be willing, but the flesh is weak. And secondly, yes, indeed, there are some religious speakers that fall short of what they preach. They fall short of the ideals of their religion. However, there are still plenty of other spokespeople who do manage to live up to the ideals they profess. So we should see both sides. We should not just focus on the ones who fail to practice what they preach. There are a lot of other speakers, other religious scholars and intellectuals who live up to the expectations and teachings of the religion. And thirdly, and this is perhaps the most important observation that I want to share with you with respect to hypocrisy. Hypocrisy is not the province of religion. It's not something limited or exclusive to religious communities. All human beings are prone to hypocrisy. It afflicts both religious people and atheists. So, you know, we need to be a little bit more honest about this whole thing. We should not just blame religious people for being hypocritical. We should not single them out. We should realize that hypocrisy is a human trait and we all suffer from that. Now, let's turn to another key factor behind the decline of religion in America, which I explained in detail last time. Clash of religion and the modern culture. This clash between religious teachings and the modern cultural norms and mores actually is behind the decline of religion in America. I think it goes without saying that Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, they all have frictions with some aspects of the modern Western culture. Things such as women's rights, sex outside marriage, homosexuality, and abortion. These are really bones of contention between at least traditional religious teachings and modern cultural mores. Let me give you an example. A couple go to church or mosque, and in that place of worship, they are told that homosexuality is a terrible sin. But one day, this couple find out that their own son or daughter, their own brother or sister is a homosexual. You see, it is one thing to talk about homosexuality as an abstract idea, and it is something totally different when it knocks on your own door. Will my loved one burn in hell for that sin? This is real. This is really real. And that's what I mean by a clash between traditional religious teachings and modern cultural mores. Although homosexuality is as old as the human race, but at least in modern times in the West, now a lot of people openly admit that they are homosexual. And that flies in the face of traditional religious teachings. The big question facing religious thinkers in Muslim, Jewish, and Christian communities is this. Since we are out of steps with modern mores, with modern norms, should we abandon our traditional religious teachings on these matters? Or instead, should we stay put and resist the modern culture? Scholars, theologians, and intellectuals have weighed in on this critical question. There is no consensus. There is no consensus among scholars and religious intellectuals on this question. There is a spectrum of opinion. Now, today, we are running out of time. I cannot do a deep dive on that spectrum of opinion on this question. But let me quickly talk about an intriguing idea which is articulated by some Christian thinkers on the question that I just raised. And this idea articulated by some Christian thinkers, I believe, resonate with many Muslims. Russell Moore is a Christian writer. In his book, Onward, Engaging the Culture Without Losing the Gospel, he argues that the friction between Christianity and modern mores simply means that Christians are doing something right. This friction says that Christians are essentially staying true to their faith. He says, and I quote, this is a quotation from his book, "A Christianity that is without friction in the culture is a Christianity that dies. Such religion absorbs the ambient culture until it is indistinguishable from it, until eventually a culture asks what the point is of the whole thing. Really fascinating idea. I think Russell Moore has a good point here. If religion bends, if religion assimilates new cultural norms and values, ultimately a time will come when religion becomes indistinguishable from the prevailing culture. In that case, one can ask a valid question. What's the point of religion? What is the use of religion? Now comes the other important question. What should American Christians do? Right? So that's a valid question for the likes of Russell Moore to answer. What should Christian Americans do? Let me introduce you to another Christian writer. Rod Dreher is a Christian writer and journalist. In his best-selling book, The Benedict Option, A Strategy for Christians in a Post-Christian Nation, he has actually answered our question. He has answered the question, what should Christians do? The central contention of his book, and please pay attention, the central contention of Dreher's book is that American Christians have been too accommodating. They have accommodated too much with respect to the prevailing secular culture. In the U.S., according to him, authentic, worthy of the name Christianity is rapidly fading. It is a rapidly fading force, morally, artistically, culturally, politically, socially, worthy of the name Christianity is fading. And here I want to emphasize the phrase worthy of the name Christianity. Dreher says, and I quote, American Christians are going to have to come to terms with the brute fact that we live in a culture, one in which our beliefs make increasingly little sense. We speak a language that the world more and more either cannot hear or finds offensive to its ears. Very beautifully put. Dreher likens the situation of contemporary Christians to that of Europe's Christians following the fall of the Roman Empire, you know, in the 2nd or 3rd century AD. And by the way, that's where the book's master metaphor, Benedict Option, comes in. For those of you who are familiar with the history of Christianity, Saint Benedict, after the fall of the Roman Empire, gathered together the surviving remnants of Christian practice, Christian morality and culture in monasteries. And essentially that was one of the main reasons for the rise of monastic Christianity at that time. Saint Benedict, his plan was the following: hunker down, hang on to your religious teachings until times are more hospitable for rebuilding and re-evangelization. That was his plan, and by the way, it worked. It worked. According to Dreher, contemporary American Christians should do the same thing. Rather than being absorbed by the secular culture, they should embrace what he calls exile in place. Exile in place. They should form a vibrant counterculture. Exile means living outside your nation. In this case, exile in place, it means that Christians who are now in minority in America actually live in exile in their own nation. An intriguing idea, isn't it? So he suggests that like-minded Christians should form communities and neighborhoods where a serious version of Christianity is valued and practiced. They should wait out the modern secular culture until times are more hospitable for rebuilding, until times are more hospitable for re-evangelizations. If Christians allow themselves to be absorbed by the secular culture, Christianity will die. I think there are many Jewish and Muslim thinkers that would agree with what Russell Moore and Rod Dreher argue. Dr. Sayyid Hussein Nasr is one of them. Dr. Nasr, I'm sure many of you are familiar with him. He is perhaps one of the most renowned Muslim scholars in the U.S. academia, and his line of thinking, his vision for what Muslims should do in the modern times pretty much are in line with what Dreher and Moore argues. Even though I am a reformist Muslim, I can see the wisdom. I can see the wisdom in what the likes of Russell Moore, Rod Dreher, and Sayyid Hussein Nasr argue. I also think we should be extremely careful, extremely cautious here. We should not accommodate the secular norms and values so much that in the end, our religion would become indistinguishable from the prevailing secular culture. There must always be red lines that we should not cross. Now, what are those red lines? Topic for another conversation. But the sheer recognition that there must be red lines is critical. It's very critical. We should always remember that ultimately, the one that has to change is us, not our religion. Not our religion. We have all sorts of flaws and shortcomings. You see, sometimes young folks come to me after my lectures and complain about some Islamic practices and norms. They say, for example, O Mr. Intizam, doing Salat is so cumbersome these days. Fasting is so cumbersome. Mr. Intizam, what is wrong with drinking alcohol in moderation? My answer is very simple. If you are looking for a religion that endorses who you are, if you are looking for a religion that endorses your lifestyle, your flaws, your biases, if you are looking for a religion that endorses what your heart desires, don't bother. Don't bother. Go on and live as your heart desires. Authentic religion is meant to be a voice for becoming something else. Religion is not here to validate and endorse our flaws and shortcomings. Rather, it is here to challenge us to overcome our biases and flaws. The mission of authentic religion is to encourage us to become better, to become more wholesome, to realize our divine potential. And guess what, my friends? That sure ain't gonna be easy to do. It's going to be increasingly more and more difficult to live the message of our religion. We're running out of time and I have to stop right here. Inshallah, I try to address some of the other factors behind the decline of religion in America in a future sermon.